There is no free lunch when it comes to investing, but what about a podcast that delivers educational content on investing, financial planning, items of interest, and even the odd wacky topic? Welcome to The Free Lunch, hosted by Canvas Wealth. Free Lunch will bring listeners the team's vast knowledge and experience in dealing with uncertainty. Learn more and subscribe today at canvaswealth.ca.
Welcome back to the Free Lunch Podcast with Colin and Karen today. Karen, just you and me today.
Yep.
Just the way it should be.
I think there's a song like that, isn't there? Just.
Yeah, I was going to sing, but nobody needs to hear that.
We would lose our listenership like that.
Yeah. Last week, we talked about Mother's Day. Mother's Day is a special day, of course.
Of course.
Do anything special for Mother's Day?
You know what? I had a fabulous Mother's Day in Edmonton watching basketball.
Oh, excellent.
With
excellent.
Both of my kids.
Yeah.
We were going to bring the dog too, and I had to boundaries. I'm like, no, there's only so many things I can handle.
So who's looking after the dog?
One of our neighbors.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. She usually has about 13 dogs at any given point in time. And she's got like 4 kids.
Oh, geez.
And a very, very supportive husband.
Well, speaking of support, we're transitioning from Mother's Day into the cost of education.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a very good segue on my part, but
if you listen to the Mother's Day episode, it would make sense.
It would make sense because there is a cost of education when your kids grow up.
Yes.
I'm going through this right now as my daughter's just waiting to hear from a couple universities to go get in. So what does affordable education mean today? So this is a big question because it's a big unknown. And affordability in education encompasses more than just the tuition. Everybody focuses on tuition. Like, what's the cost to go to, I don't know, University of Calgary versus Mount Royal versus Arizona State? Mm-hmm. Like, there's a huge discrepancy in tuition. We'll get into that.
Mm-hmm.
But it also includes, like, living expenses.
Yes.
The availability of financial aid and the overall economic impact on the student and their family.
Mm-hmm.
So, because tuition costs, as I mentioned, for this upcoming year, well, actually, is it upcoming? No, it's last year, 2024 to 2025.
Correct.
The average annual tuition for a domestic undergraduate student in Canada was approximately $7,360, while international students, on average, paid $40,000 per year.
Boom.
Now, there's been a lot of change in how many international students are allowed into these programs.
Yes.
I think that the schools would like to have more international students if you can charge them 6 times as much, right? Mm-hmm. But that's just the tuition. Then there's the living expenses, which typically is about, I don't know, $20,000 to $30,000 annually. Mm-hmm. And that might be low, that might be high, depending on where you're living.
Depends on how the kid lives, too.
Yeah, for sure. I feel like our kids, I don't know about your kids, my kids, I was just having this conversation with a neighbor the other night about how, you know, when we first moved out, it was kind of a rundown, dumpy place and used whatever furniture was available, whatever you could scrounge up from whoever. And I feel like my kids expect a condo that's fully furnished with new furniture.
And an air fryer and one of those really fancy ninja blenders.
I don't know the ninja blender.
Like $700.
Oh, geez. Yeah. Yeah, no. Well, I shouldn't say it. We have a Vitamix, which is kind of the same thing.
Yep. But I just had this conversation with one of my friends where her daughter wants this. And she said, well, why don't I buy it for me and you can have the one that we already have?
Yeah, that makes tons of sense. Tons of sense.
But not to the daughter.
Wait. The person you had this conversation with is the same person I had my conversation with, who shall remain unnamed.
V&B?
Yes.
Come on.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
So you heard the situation about this swag apartment that they're moving into.
I did.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, that's it. That's funny.
That is
small
funny.
World. Small mm-hmm. world. Anyways, enough of our banter about our neighbors.
I'm also going to be spending time with her this weekend.
Oh, good, good.
So we'll talk about you.
Well, so getting back to the affordable education, this is a real strain on a lot of people. And there are some support mechanisms in place to assist students in managing these expenses. What would those start with?
Well, you know, first of all, I think that we should talk about the actual cost of tuition, because the average undergraduate tuition in Canada for, well, I guess if we're taking a look at 2023 to 2024, and we're going to have some different dates here, but you'll notice a trend going through all of this that the costs just keep increasing. Mm-hmm. So the average cost is $6,500, but it varies depending on where they live, because in Quebec, it's one of the lowest, and it was around $3,300 for in-province students. Mm-hmm. You take a look at Ontario, and this one surprised me, Nova Scotia. They're amongst the highest with $7,000 to $8,000 a year, and that's just for undergrad. If we're talking about an actual professional program like medicine, law, engineering, mm-hmm. or as you alluded to earlier, international student tuition, significantly higher, exceeding $35,000 a year.
Yeah.
That's just the cost of tuition.
Yeah, that doesn't include the cost of living. And as we know, living in Calgary, the cost of living is quite high. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to school in Toronto, Vancouver, Calgary, places where there's a high demand for rental units and a limited supply, I mean, you're probably faced with somewhere $1,200 to $1,800 a month in rent.
Right, per person, even in a shared space.
Yeah, that's huge, mm-hmm. huge. And then you got to tack on, like, well, how do you get to school, right? You know, you've got a transit or, well, my kids don't know what transit is. So it'd be like a car, you know, and so that's another expense. That could be, when you add in food, maybe $1,000 a month. So now you're close to $2,800 a month just for living expenses, not including the tuition.
Man, how do people handle this student debt and all the pressures that come with this finance? We take a look at the average student debt in Canada around graduation, or pardon me, upon graduation, it's around $28,000. And I remember this when I graduated back in 94, my student debt was about $33,000. And the first job I got mm-hmm. wasn't even that amount.
Yeah.
I thought, how am I ever going to do this? So, but you know, despite this low tuition by global standards, the high living costs and limited availability of part-time work in some of these provinces can increase the reliance on debt.
Yeah. So you know how I dealt with my student loans? Is I just didn't pay them.
Is that right?
Yeah. And then they defaulted, and then I got married, and then I had to do a debt consolidation loan.
Yeah. So. Well, at least Leanne, I got you on track.
Yeah. It's all good now. It's all good. But yeah, when you're, you know, when you're early 20s and you're faced with all that debt, and sometimes you just can't pay it.
And it feels like you can never get out from underneath it. So you do have to look at alternatives.
Yeah. And the government knows this. And so there's been some change or, yeah, some reforms to the systems. So one of the things that was reformed was interest elimination. Mm-hmm. So as of April 1st, 2023, the government permanently eliminated interest accumulation on all Canada student loans.
Isn't that amazing?
I think it's the right thing to do.
It is, because yeah. they are the future of our country.
Yep, yep.
And although when I think about my kids being the future of our country, I'm concerned.
Well, I mean, they could be the future of Safeway. They could be the future of, I'm just joking.
My phone just went off. It's the school messenger indicating one of my kids was late or absent.
Oh, you know what? I had a way of dealing with that too when my kids were in high school. Is I just blocked that number.
Oh, I should do that.
Yeah, so just go to voicemail.
Okay.
Anyways, repayment assistance plan is another change or reform. So no borrower was required to repay their Canada student loan until they earn at least $40,000 annually. So that would have helped you out.
Absolutely, it would.
Because I know my first job working at a bank was like $27,000 a year. Oh,
yeah, I think.
Same bank.
Yeah. Actually, no, mine was
different bank.
Yeah. But
they're all kind of the same.
They really are.
Yeah. So anyways, these measures are aimed to reduce the financial burden on graduates and improve some long-term sustainability for the student loan system.
Yeah. So if we take a look at the different types of funding options for Canadian students, at least, there are government grants and loans. And we talked a little bit about this, but the Canada Student Financial Assistance Program, which we lovingly refer to as CSFA, It offers grants up to $4,200 a year for those low-income students. And again, this is non-repayable, so they don't have to worry about repaying that back. And again, the interest-free loans while studying, and repayment starts 6 months after graduation. Mm-hmm. And then there's also, those are the federal ones. If we take a look at provincial ones, OSAP in Ontario, OSAP, and Student Aid BC, those offer additional aid to the future of our country.
But I wonder if those programs would be just specific to Ontario residents and BC residents.
As opposed to international students?
No, like I'm thinking, you know, because my daughter's looking at UBC, and so if she went to UBC, I don't know if she'd qualify for Student Aid BC as an Alberta resident going to a BC school.
That's the next episode. Yeah. And you can find out next week.
Yeah. Okay, well, and then of course there's RESPs.
Yes.
I mean, this is a great program, but it requires diligence. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things when we have clients that have kids early, you know, have young kids, we often say, just start chipping away in your RESP, right? Put $100 a month into it. You'd be surprised how big that RESP can grow over 20 years. Mm-hmm. You know, so it is a tax sheltered investment account for post-secondary savings. And you do obviously get a Canada Education Savings Grant on the first $2,500 a year and up to a lifetime maximum of $7,200. Mm-hmm. So why not take that free grant money, right?
Absolutely. Get money from the government?
Yeah.
Take it.
Well, especially if you're talking about expected rates of return. Like, you can't get 20% rates of return from the stock market every year.
It's an immediate bump.
Yeah.
And let's not forget that if you miss those contributions, you can catch up on them later.
You can. Although there's also, I don't know if it's a mistake or not, you can fund an RESP the minute your child's born, the full lifetime maximum.
Oh, of course you can.
But then you lose the future grants.
Correct.
So,
and did you know that we have a blog post about this on our website?
Well, I do know that.
We outlined three different ways that you can fund your RESPs to meet whatever situation you're in.
Yeah.
Because time and compounding are the greatest gift that we can ever give you.
The value of compounding, for sure. Oh, sorry. I was also going to mention there are additional grants if you are a low-income family via the Canada Learning Bond. Mm-hmm. So if that's something that somebody's interested in, I'm sure you could Google it.
Yeah, and sometimes I think we have to take a look at if these RESP incentives are sufficient for families, because obviously RESPs are a cornerstone of educational funding, and they do offer these tax-advantaged savings and government contributions. While all of this is great, the rising cost of education means that families often need to supplement RESPs with additional savings or look for financial aid to fully cover post-secondary expenses.
Yeah.
Or maybe your kid's not going to be a doctor and they're going to come out with an arts degree.
I hope not, because it's hard to get a job with that degree. But anyways, that's a whole other topic. But hey, yeah, listen, I always tell my kids, like, I don't care what you do. Just find something that brings you happiness, you know, and we can figure the rest out later.
Who needs an education?
Well, actually, and at the end of this episode, if we have time, we're going to talk about the difference between university education and trades.
Yes.
Because the trade program is an excellent program.
It is.
And so anyways, I won't spoil that surprise. But let's talk about scholarships, bursaries, and awards, because you can apply for these things.
Mm-hmm.
There's lots of universities that offer merit-based and needs-based scholarships. And so whatever school you're applying to, I would suggest that you also look into what types of scholarship bursaries and awards are available to you.
Yep. I agree. Shall we jump on to tax credits?
Absolutely.
Because there are a lot of tax credits that students can claim. And I just want to talk about three of them. Tuition tax credit. This can be federally or provincially. Education and textbook amounts. This isn't in all provinces. It is in some provinces. And, of course, then finally transferable credits to parents or spouses if income is low enough.
Yeah, sure. Well, in the next section, we're talking about work, study, and co-op programs. And this rings true to us because we just took on a co-op student for the summer.
That's right.
Right? So Jacob joined us. He's a finance business degree person in his last year of school at SAIT, And so this is an excellent opportunity for students to get summer employment that actually will give them real life experience going into the program that they're studying for. And it's not super expensive for employers, but it certainly helps out. It helps out those employers because we're definitely going to put the workload on Jacob, and it gives them a lot of experience. So it's interesting when I was interviewing Jacob and he was talking about finance and markets and this and that. And I was like, okay, you're just reciting what you heard your profs tell you. Mm-hmm. So what you're going to learn in this job is how it really works. So that's a whole other topic.
There's the theory and the practical.
Yep. Yep. What about federal budget changes or measures?
If we look at 2024-2025 budget, it includes $1.3 billion to improve affordability for students. And this comes in different enhanced grants, loan repayment flexibility, and funding for housing. And then also, I don't know if you knew this, but there was a temporary GST, HST exemption on books and learning materials to help reduce those school-related costs.
I think they should just get rid of GST and HST on those things permanently.
Honestly, like textbooks?
Yeah.
Are crazy, ridiculously expensive, and you always have to buy the most recent edition.
It's a big scam.
It is.
Yeah. I know when I did my MBA, I had to buy all kinds of textbooks, and you try to find ones online, but they were the 7th edition and you needed the 9th edition.
Because you know one of the questions on the exam is going to be only on information provided in the most latest edition.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, well, let's talk about how the federal policies are addressing student housing, because as we just talked about, housing is an issue depending on where you're going to school. Mm-hmm. It's an issue in Calgary for sure. There is a Canada Housing Plan, which was unveiled just a year ago, and it does include investments to increase housing supply, preserve affordable housing, protect renters, and its focus is to ensure that no Canadians spend more than 30% of their income on housing. Now, this sounds, again, like a great model. The reality is it's $1,800 a month to rent a one-bedroom condo in Calgary. So I don't know what student is making enough that constitutes less than 30% of their income.
Right.
But it's, I don't know.
It is what it is.
It's a goal. It's a goal. It's more of a wish, really. Right?
Wow. It, or a platform.
Yeah. Now, getting back to that international student visa cap, this was done, I think, for two reasons. Number one, to alleviate some of those housing pressures, because they have reduced new international student visas by 35%. However, I also think it gives the ability for Canadian kids to get into some of the schools that they couldn't get into. Because I know when my daughter was applying at University of Calgary, I mean, you needed a 90% to get into social work. That's crazy.
It is.
You know,
especially for the kids that were impacted by COVID and it disrupted their learning, which I think was right around that time for yours.
Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure. That's a whole other topic for sure. But there are some broad, I don't know, results of COVID. They're not in a good way.
Nope.
But anyways, let's compare Canada to the U.S. though, because we've been very Canadian specific here.
We have been. And we have friends and clients that send their kids to get an education down in the U.S.
In America.
America.
Yep.
Let me put my ball cap on. Undergrad tuition in Canada, we talked about that number, $6,500. Well, if you take a look at the U.S., so first of all, there's two distinctions, public colleges and private colleges. So public colleges in the U.S., $11,260 per year.
Mm-hmm.
Private, almost four times as much, $4,540 a year.
I think you meant $41,540.
You know what? Honestly, I was working with Jacob this morning and I was not drinking coffee. Yes, that is what I meant to say. I'm good with math.
And actually, I think those numbers are even light. Having spent a fair bit of time in Arizona over the years, I talked to a number of locals there. Now, to get that public college amount, you actually have to be a resident of that state.
Oh.
So if you lived in, I don't know, Kentucky, and you wanted to go to Arizona State, there's an out-of-state expense unless you move to Arizona for 1 year before, live there, work there, pay taxes there, whatever those might be, then you can qualify as a resident.
So very different.
Yeah. 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 And listen, like I went to school in North Dakota for one whole year, and it is different. Firstly, the education is different too. Mm-hmm. I won't get into that today, but also the healthcare is different because, well, it's just different. We have publicly funded healthcare here.
And they do not.
Yeah. So if your child is going to go to some school in the US, you're probably going to need to fund some healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What else? What do we got next here?
Supporting international students.
Well, of course we're supporting them because they pay four to six times as much in tuition as Canadian kids. But anyways, the international students do contribute quite a bit to the economy. Like I think the number in 2022 was something like $37 billion.
Not bad.
That's a big number. But they do obviously have those higher costs that we mentioned, you know, four to six times as much in tuition. So, but given their significant contributions, there is a growing consensus that Canada should enhance support for international students, such as expanding access to financial aid, improving pathways to permanent residency, and ensuring adequate housing and support services. Now, this could be a very controversial topic,
yes,
and we won't get into that, but Canada does need to have an immigration policy because we need to expand our labor force, right? And so, yeah, I can see if you give access to international students to study in Canada, giving them a pathway to find a job here when they're done and contributing to the Canadian economy, not such a bad thing at all.
I agree. But this brings to mind, like, what happens if you graduate and then you can't find a job, or you get one of those low-paying jobs, or even what's the opportunity cost of not going to university? And we mm-hmm. touched on this, but there is an economic and personal value that you do forego by choosing not to attend post-secondary education. Mm-hmm. And this, of course, is going to vary by individual circumstance. But if we were to take a look at this, it would include some of these things: lost lifetime earnings. University graduates in Canada, they do earn significantly more than those with only a high school diploma.
Mm-hmm.
And if we take a look at Stats Canada information from 2022, over a 40-year career, a male university graduate earns about $1.3 million more than a high school graduate. And I hate to say this, but there is that wage gap mm-hmm. because female graduates, the difference is about $970,000. So mm-hmm. we're looking at a couple of different situations here, but look at the average annual earnings for high school diploma, $44,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
Bachelor's degree, $69,000-$70,000 a year. And then, of course, master's or professional degree, $85,000 a year.
You know, so first of all, the gender gap.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess a lot of that would be based around having kids and raising families and things like that. But that's there. It's mm-hmm. definitely, there is a gap there. Mm-hmm. But the gap in the high school to master's or professional degrees, I kind of get that one, you know, because like if you spend, well, first of all, you finish your high school, you go and get a bachelor's degree, then you go back to school for a year or two for a master's degree, and maybe even further than that, you're also, you've put a lot of time and effort and money into that path. I would expect you to get paid more.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But there's also other things outside of that that, you know, are hard to quantify.
Right.
And one of that would be like delayed career progression. So many skilled roles do require those degrees just to get a job, right? And so without a degree, that career growth can plateau earlier and you might miss out on opportunities in leadership or specialized positions just because of your lack of a formal education, right? I'll also talk about reduced job security and employment rates. So when you have a high school diploma versus having a bachelor's degree or a master's degree, your job is more at risk typically because it is more of an entry-level type of position.
Correct.
And so when you go through an economic contraction, it's typically the people in the jobs that are at the, I don't know, the beginning of the totem pole, not the top of the totem pole that right. whose jobs get affected, right? So university grads can be more resilient during economic downturns for sure.
Yeah, and you know, if we're, and this is what I would say to my kids as well, if you're not going to go after that post-secondary education, you're going to miss out on technical knowledge, which is a requirement in a lot of fields, but you're also going to miss out on opportunities to develop things like soft skills, right? When mm-hmm. you're working through presentations, doing teamwork, and even writing, or should I say chat GPTing, writing is going to be a lost art. I'm afraid of that.
Yeah.
But also so much, and I, you know, it's probably not this way all across Canada, but I know in Calgary, a lot of the jobs that you're aware of are because you know people that work in that industry. So mm-hmm. we're just talking about access to professional networking and co-op or internship opportunities that will eventually lead to higher quality jobs.
Yeah. And I'll finish off this section with the non-financial costs. And we're going through a bit of this personally, as I have one child, he's not a child, he's an adult, young adult, who is not in university, and one going into university. And there is the potential for some reduced lifetime satisfaction. Mm-hmm. You might feel like you've missed out on something that you haven't. I don't know, like that's a very qualitative, not quantitative factor. And there's limited mobility and flexibility in a knowledge-based economy if you just don't have that knowledge base. Now, having said that, an excellent area to look at for, because not everybody's made to go to university, right?
Right.
And not everybody should. And so an excellent area to look at are trades. Mm-hmm. You know, as we go into the future and you want to future-proof your economic life, some of the educated jobs are going to go away, mm-hmm. right? Like I think of kids that are in graphic design.
Yes.
I mean, you can use generative AI to create some pretty wicked graphic designs without spending 4 years in a degree program.
Right.
So I worry about jobs like that. But if you were a plumber or an electrician, I don't think those jobs are ever going to go away.
Right.
Right.
And some of those skills are just super handy to have for everyday living, because yeah. knowing how to change your own oil, mm-hmm. right? That's knowing how to change a tire. I'm very ashamed to say that I call on my husband to do both of those things for me. God bless him.
Good for him. Good for Jeff, because I don't know how to change my own oil. I probably could figure it out.
Just call Jeff.
I'll give him a shout. But I think of the wage that you get. There is a difference in wages.
Absolutely.
Right? So if you're going into, and we'll just spend just 2 minutes on this, but if you're going into a university education, it's taking 3 to 4 years to get your bachelor's degree, probably in most cases more like 5 or 6, you know, it's $20,000 to $40,000 a year. You've got those living costs that we talked about. I mean, that all adds up, right? Mm-hmm. But if you go into a trade path, you know, the apprenticeship model, which is work and training combined, mm-hmm. you can oftentimes start earning income right away. And the income isn't insignificant, right? Like the median salary of a university education, as you talked about, is somewhere between $70,000 and $90,000 a year. The median salary for a electrician plumber in Canada is $75,000 to $100,000 a year. Mm-hmm. That's not so bad.
It's not so bad. And the people that are more naturally business-minded can eventually open up their own companies.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. There's a huge path there, because they're going to learn the skill that's going to get them the job, and they're going to learn that skill pretty quickly. They're going to start getting paid right away. And if they're entrepreneurial-minded, you know, we have somebody that we do some work with that is very wealthy, and he started his career as a 17-year-old electrician.
That's right.
Yeah. So anyways, I'm just saying that, you know, and we don't need to go through the whole list because we're going to run out of time, but that university is great for those that are inclined to go to university, but trades are also really great for those that are not.
Correct.
Yeah. Anyways, anything to add to that?
Well, no.
You're still thinking about your knee.
It really hurts. This giant, I don't know how I banged my knee on this giant table.
Oh, I bang my knee on this table all the time. Sucks.
It's not giant.
Yeah.
I can't wait until we do video and people can see the size of this sucker.
It looks like a Barbie table.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, well, let's just finish this off with a couple key takeaways then. So university obviously offers some broad career options, but comes with higher debt and a slower financial start. Trades offer quicker income, lower debt, and strong demand, especially with a looming skilled labor shortage in Canada, to which mm-hmm. there is one. Mm-hmm. The return on investment for trades can outperform university, especially in the first 10 to 15 years. And the best path for you depends on your interests. Some are academic, some are hands-on. And what are your career goals? Big questions.
Beautiful.
Beautiful. Okay. Is that it?
I think so.
Okay. Well, fine. We'll stop talking now.
Till next time.
All right.
Thank you for listening to the Free Lunch Podcast hosted by Canvas Wealth. To subscribe to this podcast to get more realistic insights on investing or to connect with one of our talented partners, please head on over to canvaswealth.ca. We'll see you next time on the Free Lunch Podcast.
Financial planning services are offered through Canvas Wealth. Portfolio management services are provided by Q Wealth Partners, a registered portfolio manager, investment fund manager, and exempt market dealer. Canvas Wealth is an owner and partner in the Q Wealth Partnership. The information discussed in this show, including any opinion, is based on various sources believed to be reliable, but its accuracy cannot be guaranteed and is subject to change. The opinions expressed in this show are opinions of the individuals and do not represent the opinion of Q Wealth as a firm.